This is Craig Mastantuono, guest hosting the Paul Revere Radio Show for regular host Mark Thompson. Happy to be filling in for Mark tonight and talking electoral politics in Wisconsin, specifically this evening, the Milwaukee area and the 5th Senate District. Last week, we were able to have Christine Sinicki, chairman of the Democratic Party of Milwaukee County, and also state representative in the Wisconsin legislature. We covered a variety of topics related to Democratic electoral politics and the Republican domination of our state Senate and state assembly. Tonight, we have a candidate for the state Senate, Jessica Katzenmeier, for Senate candidate for the 5th Senate District as our guest. So hopefully we'll be able to continue that conversation and further some of those themes that we discussed with Representative Sinicki. Jessica, welcome to the Paul Revere Radio Show.
Hey, thank you for having me on.
It's good that you're here. We were talking before the show just a little bit about your emergence from the contested primary to be the Democratic candidate for the 5th Senate District. So maybe you could tell our listeners just a little bit about yourself and your background. And but before we do that, let's talk about the 5th Senate District. Can you tell us where that is and what area you seek to represent?
Absolutely. So, of course, with the redistricting that happened this year, with all the court cases and the maps, we got the GOP maps that we have right now. And with what we have for the 5th State Senate District is the western suburbs of Milwaukee. So we cover all of New Berlin, all of Brookfield, Elm Grove. We have, I like to say, gerrymandered parts of Wauwatosa because it is like really all cut up in there, what they did to Wauwatosa. And at the western part of West Dallas, where I'm from, and then we have small little parts of Waukesha as well. It's a very big territory. This is known as one of the, are probably the most competitive race for the state legislature this cycle, rated at a partisan rating of a D+1 district, meaning a Democrat's likely to win this by one percentage point. It's been a fun race so far, and learning the new district lines, it's been a little bit of a challenge, but we're making the best of it, and we've been gaining lots of support in this race, and here we are.
Okay, western Milwaukee suburbs, and we'll come back to that a little bit. How did you decide to run in the primary? Tell us a little bit about your background and your decision to run to be a Wisconsin state senator.
So I was running for Congress for the 5th Congressional District for 6 months. I started my campaign on October 4th, so by election day, we would be out here campaigning for over a year now. I ran for Congress for 6 months, and then we learned of the new maps coming down. And on my birthday of all days, on March 3rd, was the day that the Wisconsin Supreme Court made the ruling, which originally ruled in favor of the least change maps by Governor Evers. I was moved about a mile outside of the congressional district, and I didn't find that race to be a viable race for me to stay in. It went from an R+15 in the partisan ratings to an R+28. And then I already had a primary opponent in that race. So I decided to get out of that race because my team was advising me on, you know, they thought that it would be best for me to get out of it and to look at State Senate District 5 as a race to jump into. And I had known that Tom Posowicz, a friend of mine, a good guy, was thinking about running. And I wanted to make the switch as fast as possible. And we kept it pretty quiet about it. We talked to a few people that needed to know about it and got advice from sources that we needed to. And my team switched everything over in 6 days. 6 days later, I announced that I switched. I dropped out of the congressional race. And here I am running for state Senate. Tom got into the race late in April. And Tom's a good guy. He ran for the 5th CD two cycles in a row. So he built up a lot of name recognition, as well as he's a small business coach too. So he knows a lot of people in the area. And he outraised me, and we knew that that was probably going to happen. He's got money as well as himself. And he, you know, one of the things that we did, and this is how we got over the top of the primary, is we just outworked him on the ground. I knocked more doors. I was out there at events. When Roe was overturned, I was out there on the front lines of pro-choice rallies, and people respect that when they see their candidates standing alongside them in front lines. And this is how we got over the top. And I ended up winning a historic primary by nearly 10 points as the out transgender woman, as the first one to win a contested primary, partisan primary, that is, in the state of Wisconsin. So I could go a little bit to my background.
Love to hear a little bit about that. Let me just remind our viewers, we're talking with a Democratic candidate for Wisconsin State Senate, Jessica Katzenmeyer. This is attorney Craig Mastantuono filling in for attorney Mark Thompson, guest hosting the Paul Revere Show on 540 AM Waukesha Radio 101.1 The Shaw, and in Madison Devil Radio 1580 and AM and FM 92.7. Okay, Jessica, let's get back to that. I just wanted to follow up, maybe ask a few questions about some of the things you talked about already. So you were the first one, you kind of got mapped out of your congressional race. The district you were running for basically got turned into a more favorable Republican district. And you got mapped in to, or actually, and then you were mapped out of the district itself. Is that right? Your residency? And then you,
right.
And then you jumped into this Senate 5 race in the primary, and you were the first one in.
Yes, I was. I was the first one to declare on this race. And I mean, it has challenges when you have a primary. It's hard to fundraise. It's hard to get endorsements as well, too. And I knew that that's how we were going to have to win this primary, was just outworking my opponent on the ground game, as well as another strength of mine is networking and messaging. How do we market ourselves as a campaign? What do we want Democratic voters to support me with, you know, what kind of messaging? And
a lot of people sit on the, sorry to interrupt you, a lot of people sit on the sidelines in a primary, right? A lot of your Democratic friends say, look, I'm not going to support anybody right now. That's kind of a common theme on the inside game, right? When you're trying to gain or attract endorsements. So you had to do it, I guess, the old shoe leather way, which was try to, you know, as you said, outwork everybody, knock on doors, go to events, stand in solidarity with people and causes that are Democratic focused causes. Is that the gist of it for your primary strategy?
That is exactly right. That's exactly what we did. I have an amazing team of interns who work for me, as well as an amazing campaign manager. And, you know, everybody, you know, we always had meetings before we came out with policies that we thought that we're going to speak to our voting base. And then when the Roe leak happened in May, I knew right there and then that was going to be the biggest issue in this race.
And Roe versus Wade becoming overturned by this Supreme Court.
Right. And in other words, known as the Dobbs decision. And I knew right there and then this was going to be the biggest issue, and we ran with it.
And so let's talk about that. How did you do that? How did you focus on that? Because I'd like to think that every, you know, candidate for elective office who is a Democrat is running hard on that issue of the Dobbs decision taking away a woman's right to make reproductive health care choices. But how did you distinguish yourself within that mix?
Well, I mean, as a woman, you know, as a trans woman myself, I think that I use that to my advantage as being a woman in this race. And I think that a lot of the voters in our primary, you know, they looked at the two candidates like, okay, I see there's a woman in the race. I trust her to fight for my abortion rights more over than my primary opponent. And that's why I picked that as one of our number one issues that we went with. And I saw how much it energized the base. You know, we see this across the country now. Look what happened in Kansas. of all places, Kansas, a conservative state, 58% of the people there voted to protect their abortion rights. And that, you know, when you have that energized base, you know what? I find what works. I drop what doesn't work. And that's how we ran with this primary. And we just kept that momentum going and we built on it. And here I am today.
Okay. Well, I want to talk about the Dobbs decision and women's reproductive rights more generally in Democratic politics towards the end of our show, picking up on what we spoke about with Representative Sinicki last week. But let's use the last 2 minutes before the break. Will you join us on the other side, first of all?
Of course.
And let's use these last couple of minutes just to introduce your background, and we'll pick up on that on the other side.
So I'm a longtime Wisconsinite now. I am a transplant. I moved here for college 25 years ago. I fell in love with the area. I fell in love with the city and the metro area of Milwaukee. I love the people here. And here I am. I'm still here in this area 25 years later. I live in West Dallas. I live right in the little downtown area there. So I serve on the Planning Commission there right now. I've been on that for over a year and a half. So we help small businesses come into our community. And anybody who knows anything about West Dallas, we are a very rich small business community. I have been a former member of the union, a member of Teamsters Local 344 for over 12 years. And I served as secretary of their political and legislative committee for 3 years. So I've got a rich union background, and that's where I learned a lot of my hard work ethic that I bring into this campaign. And I think that's one thing that people love about me. I'm very pro workers' rights, very pro union. And, I like to show off my canvassing shoes and how worn down they are from knocking so many doors.
Let's pick that up on the other side, Jessica, and we'll talk about those doors that you're knocking on and whether you're backing down from a fight. Attorney Craig Mastantuono sitting in for regular host Mark Thompson. We have our guest this evening, Jessica Katzenmeier, Wisconsin Senate candidate from the Democratic Party for Senate District Number 5. Jessica, you were telling us a little bit about your background when we took the break. And let me ask just a few follow-up questions. You said you moved up here for college. Where did you go to school?
I have a degree in communication with a minor in poli-sci from the amazing UW-Milwaukee. So I am a proud cancer.
UWM brought you up.
Yes, I did. Yes, okay. I did.
And you worked a union job. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I worked at UPS for over 12 years inside the facility out there in the western suburbs as well in my district in Elm Grove. So I worked there for over 12 years, doing overnights there and the preload shift, as they call it, in the early mornings, overnights. I mean, kind of when you start at 2, 3 in the morning, it's kind of an overnight job, I would say. And it taught a lot of, you know, good work ethic, that, you know, working hard on getting the job done and learning how to multitask. And I bring a lot of that into my campaign today. So
was that your first union job?
Yes, that was my first union job.
And talk a little bit about your transition from that job through further involvement with unions, and then just a little bit on how you got on the Planning Commission in West Dallas.
Sure, yeah. I served on the Political and Legislative Committee with Teamsters Local 344 for 3 years. I was elected secretary. So if anybody out there has ever been a candidate before, it was our job to come up with those wonderful endorsement questionnaires that people love filling out. And we also interviewed the candidates who were seeking an endorsement from us. And it really sparked a lot of my interest to get involved in politics, because we would invite candidates to come speak at general membership meetings, and we would be out there outside the gates at our work facility and have candidates out there shaking hands as people are coming in and people are coming out. And, you know, I was always inspired by people who decided to run for office. It's no easy task to be a public figure like that. And I went through Emerge Wisconsin, if anybody's familiar with that program, in 2017. And then I also went through the LGBTQ Victory Institute in 2020. I was a events coordinator for Erica Flynn. She ran for assembly in the 84th Assembly District in 2018. So that really taught me a lot of like how campaigns are ran. It got me that good campaign experience working for her team. And then I decided to run in 2020 because the year before, I almost died from a staph infection in my lungs at the age of 40. If I did not have health insurance through the ACA, it would have cost me over $80,000 to save my life. And I believe that nobody should ever have to worry about going into debt or filing for bankruptcy over medical bills. And I know if I did not have health insurance, I would be going down to the courthouse the next day filing for bankruptcy because, I mean, $80,000, I'm a working class woman. And I knew that we could do better with our healthcare system. 7 months later, I got stronger, healthier. I lost a lot of weight, and I filed for candidacy for State Assembly District 15 and ran against Joe Sanfilippo. Of course, in 2020, it was the pandemic election year where we couldn't do things traditionally like we do, like knocking doors, having in-person events, going to in-person events, and it presented new challenges that we had to overcome. And I became the closest person to ever defeating him, coming within 3,000 votes of that year, something I'm very proud about as an out trans woman, because not a lot of people gave me a chance in the beginning. And they're like, oh, wait, she can actually do this. She's a viable candidate. Raised $321,000 from $100, starting with my own money, and a campaign, you know, 10 months later. And, you know, I think it made a huge impact. And the mayor saw that in West Dallas, saw how hard it worked, and wanted me on a commission. And he had appointed me to the Planning Commission in West Dallas. And I love serving on that. I love serving my community in that capacity. And I just want to serve at a higher level like this. And I've been on that for a year and a half now.
I knew that you were going to wind around to getting to the Planning Commission, Jessica. That was a good winding around to the answer to that question. But the mayor of West Dallas saw your hard work and wanted you to be more involved in your city. And so that work brings you in focus with small businesses primarily?
Yes. Yeah. West Dallas is known for our small business community there. And on the Planning Commission, it's arguably one of the more powerful commissions that the city has to offer for its residents. And what we do on that is we look at all the plans for a business, from architectural to what hours are they planning on being open to how many parking spots they have, all those little details. We look at everything, and we can make motions to approve, to deny, or to table, or to defer changes that may be needed. And I feel like it's a great part to be a part of the community, because you see them build, you see them open, and then you're like, become a customer and like, hey, I worked on this. This is so cool.
Well, we're going to take another break. And on the other side, let's talk about the issues that face you in the general and what you see as the most important issues in your path to victory.
Sounds good. Thank you.
to the Paul Revere Show. Craig Mastantuono, guest hosting for regular host Mark Thompson, and joined by our guest this evening, candidate for the Wisconsin State Senate, 5th District, Jessica Katzenmeier. Jessica, welcome back.
Thank you.
So we were just talking about the general election race. You emerged from the primary. Let me hear your thoughts on the issues and how you plan to win this race. Can you talk about the race generally just for a moment and what you're up against?
So my opponent in this race is Rob Hutton, who is a former member of the State Assembly. For those of you who know who Sarah Rodriguez is, who is our lieutenant governor nominee, she's the one who beat Rob Hutton in the 13th Assembly District by a narrow margin that year. And so he's been out of the game for a few years. So Dale Koliega is the one who currently is still technically holding this seat, but is stepping down. So we are running for an open seat, and this does change the dynamic of this election as well. So this seat is rated at a partisan rating as a D+1. President Biden won this seat by less, or won this district by less than 1% in 2020, and that means the Democrats likely to win by 1%. So we like to think.
Is that the old district or the district as drawn now?
That is the district as drawn now.
Okay.
So we'd like to think that we have an advantage of this race, but we are working really hard every single day, knocking on lots of doors, doing those fun donor calls during call time because we have to raise a lot of money. And, you know, just doing the candidate stuff that I need to do and showing up at events. And I put in probably 15, 16, 17-hour days. And I'm a working-class woman. I work a full-time job as well, too. So,
What is your full-time job?
I do Uber and Lyft full-time here in the city. So I am self-employed. Okay. I'm in transportation. And why I wanted to do that is I wanted to be full-time, self-employed, so that it allows for me to get more involved in politics. As if I worked like a 9-to-5 job, I wouldn't be able to do this, do what I do here. So I put the time and that's needed to win a campaign like this. And
let me throw a few things at you. Money. So you said you were out. You had a disadvantage, a money disadvantage in your primary. You used hustle to make up for that. Do you have a money disadvantage, do you think, in the general?
I think that it's always more challenging for Democrats to raise money against Republicans. They always seem to have like a lot of dark money floating around, as well as what the business money that comes in from millionaires to whoever it may be. And I know that that's always going to be a challenge for Democrats. But one of the things that we have an advantage of is the grassroots organizing. We may have more small dollar donors, but when you have more donors, that shows that you have more support. Because even if somebody, say, from your district donates $5, I think that they're likely going to still vote for me and support me, right? Even compared to maybe somebody who gives, $2,000 from out of district to my opponent. So I love my grassroots donors, and all that money does go a long way to help us.
Sure. Let me throw something else at you. They say, you know, boxing fans like myself say that fights are all about, you know, the matchup, you know, fights are all about the fighters. So how do you see this race, you versus Mr. Hutton, shaping up in terms of the matchup?
Well, I'm feeling very good about this race. I have an amazing team behind me. We work really hard on our, you know, tasks that we need to do. There's a lot of stuff that goes on behind a campaign that the general public typically does not see, like who runs our social media, to the financial side of things, to whatever it may be, like planning an event out. And we have an amazing group of volunteers that's been helping us each week, knocking the doors, helping to get that word out as well, too, because as a candidate, I cannot do everything myself in a district that's this big. And this is an advantage that I think that we have over my opponent, is we see the energy on our side. Our base is energized. That's what's going to win us elections. Going back to the overturning of Roe, if that's the number one thing that's energizing people, you know what? We'll take that support and we'll run with it. And my opponent, I don't see that over there. I don't see a lot of people helping him out. I saw that they posted a picture of canisters from the other day, but they were all from Madison. My canisters are all from the district. People here who care about the race and know how important this race is. This race could determine veto power in the state Senate and for our governor. And the Republicans are one net gain seat away from having a supermajority in the state Senate. So what that means is if Governor Evers is reelected, yet we lose this race, then you might as well forget that he's elected, because they're going to push everything through that they want to. And we've seen a lot of these horrible bills that's been blocked by Governor Evers these last 4 years. And that's why, you know, I've been working really hard in this race, because I know how much this means for our state.
Talking with Democratic candidate for Wisconsin State Senate, 5th District, Jessica Katzenmeier. You talked about losing the ability to Republicans potentially gaining the ability to override vetoes by Governor Evers, even if Governor Evers is reelected. How much do you hear as you're out on the campaign trail that that's something on voters' minds rather than an inside baseball issue?
Oh, it definitely is on voters' minds, because they know that many people are frustrated that our government's not working together in the way it should be. I think that we should be willing to reach across to the other side of the aisle, get things done, find some sort of common ground, and then make progress happen from there. And that's how I like to, that's who I am as a person. I'm a bridge builder, and I like to reach my hand out to the other side, and I think that's what's going to help me be successful when I'm elected. Now, if there's a supermajority, I think you could wipe out any chance of that happening, that they're just not going to care about us, and they're just going to push through what they want to. And voters do not want to see that happening. They're already frustrated with the government not working. They gaveled out back in March. They've been out of session since then. And we've had so many issues, not just the Roe being overturned. We've got the shared revenue issue going on. I've heard there's a lot out there that communities are not getting enough funding to fund vital services like police, fire, other basic community needs, as well as many other things, you know, to fix things like roads or infrastructure. And, you know, it really worries me if that supermajority happens.
Yeah, the data and the polling does seem to suggest that people want, or say that they want, people to be across the aisle or bipartisan nature, trying to come up with some of the fixes to what should be the boring business of government, right? Like you talk about railroads, roads, you know, other laws that govern how we make our way through society. But the practical reality is they're not getting that at all, are they? And if you have a veto-proof majority in the Assembly and Senate, they're going to get even less of that, right? I mean, Governor Evers' ability to govern has been as much by preventing certain things that the Republicans are trying to push as by, you know, being able to promote legislation, certainly, that gains Republican votes. That's just not happening, right?
Right. No, it's not happening at all. And what's crazy to think about is, like, Republicans want to blame Democrats for, you know, they think that we're not supporting police, or that that we're not helping crime out in our cities. Yet, they're the ones that had control of the legislature for quite some time now. And they haven't done much of anything to solve the crime issues that are going on here in the Milwaukee area, to give that funding to the police that they need to staff up and prevent the crime from happening.
Well, and now you're talking about my issue, Jessica, because my vocation as an attorney is as a criminal defense attorney. But, you know, I'm used to seeing this, and we spoke with Christine Sinicki about this last week. This issue pops up every 2 or 4 years when Republicans want to scare the pants off of voters about crime and, you know, take the latest of whatever is going on in criminal justice, blame Democrats, accuse them of being soft on crime and chase, you know, that electoral theme when really the prize is deregulation, lower taxes, and getting business to run government, and really has nothing to do with crime. I mean, do you agree with that assessment, or do you have a different take on it?
Yeah, I would agree with that. And then, of course, they are the ones that want to claim that they're fiscally responsible, yet, you know, we could just refer to the Gableman report, you know, spending over $1 million of taxpayer money on false election claims over the past, you know, almost 2 years here now. And I think that's a big waste of taxpayer money. And, you know, all these other false election claims that's been going on across the country.
Talk about a crime. I don't know how, quite frankly, Wisconsin voters and residents have put up with the fact that we've spent over $1 million on this clown that now this weekend apparently popped up at a rally and talked about how there's, you know, not enough revolutionary blood being shed by people on this, you know, premise of a stolen election. Over $1 million, I think nearing $1.5 million spent on this guy, and even Robin Voss can't take him anymore and fires him. And now I guess he's freed up even more to say crazy stuff.
Well, I mean, Robin Voss just barely got past his primary down there in that part of the state. And I think maybe that woke him up that, oh, I need to do something. So let's fire Gableman a few days later, right?
So when we talk about electoral politics on the national level, we often hear that suburban women voters are critical in determining a lot of these House and Senate races. And it seems to me that, you know, Wisconsin State District, Senate District 5, is a district that would comprise quite a few suburban women voters, right? And how much do you talk about this internally? How much do you and your team think that there's a hidden, that there's a hidden amount of votes on the Dobbs issue, on the abortion issue alone, that may be relevant in this race?
Well, I think it's huge. I think it's going to really help determine the outcome of this election. And one of the things I hear, you know, not only when I'm talking to like a persuasive audience as we are, talked to women who seem to be, or at least I get the sense that they're maybe a little more conservative, or maybe they voted for Republicans in the past, and they realize that abortion is a right that shouldn't be taken away, because maybe they feel like the abortion rights should still be there in case, say, like a mother's life is at risk, if that's the reason why she needs to have an abortion. And I always say this to people, like I say, no woman ever wants to have to make this decision, but I trust the woman to make that decision if they have to, because we don't know what the circumstances are going into it. We don't know, if she was raped or if her life is at risk. And this is really, really speaking to a lot of the leaning Republicans in our district right now. And this is why this race is giving me a really good feeling that we're going to come out on top, because not just that, but we're seeing the same trends going on across the country. I mean, a Democrat won the congressional seat in Alaska. And, it's just amazing to see what's happening.
Yeah, if Republicans pick up, you said, a seat in the Senate, they're going to be able to override vetoes, or is it two seats?
It's a net gain of one seat for the state Senate.
So the 1800s law that, completely bans abortion in Wisconsin can be modified, changed, reenacted in a newer version. Governor Evers vetoes that, and it's not going to do any good. That's what's on the horizon for women's reproductive rights if the Democrats don't hold service in the Senate or gain seats.
Right, exactly, as well as our democracy is on the line, because then if they have a supermajority, they're still going to push these false election claims. I'm sure they'll still be talking about 2020, even, in the next few years, too, and trying to overturn that election, which is completely ridiculous. We need to move forward. We don't need to move backwards.
Let's talk about that on the other side, Jessica. Will you join us after the break?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Yeah!
to the Paul Revere Radio Show. Filling in for regular host Mark Thompson, this is attorney Craig Mastantuono. And as our guest this evening, we have Wisconsin State Senate candidate, Democratic candidate for the Wisconsin State Senate, 5th District, Jessica Katzenmeier. Jessica, thanks for joining us for our final segment here.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Let me, we were talking about your general election, and, you know, it seems to me that, you know, just at my take as a city resident, as a city of Milwaukee resident, I worked in Waukesha County for a lot of years as a public defender, tried cases to juries out there. My take on a lot of the area that you describe as, you know, kind of Milwaukee moving west through some of the suburban areas, including your own West Allis, is that, you know, you get some conservative folks out that way. And, you know, I always tell people when I was in my 20s and 30s and I was a public defender in Waukesha, it was a different Waukesha County than it is now. It wasn't as crazy, quite frankly, in terms of the politics that ruled the day. They, you know, a lot of the Republicans out there were, as I call it, your father's Republicans or the Jerry Ford Republicans that wanted, you know, generally speaking, government not entangled too much in people's lives, strong belief in separation between church and state, lower taxes, and generally a more favorable regulatory environment for business. Well, you know, while paying, you know, in my opinion, lip service to a high degree to banning abortion. It's always easier to be against something than when you own it. Now Republicans own basically the Supreme Court's overturning of Roe versus Wade, taking a woman's right to choose away. Nowadays, compared with nowadays, just look at what's happened. We were talking heading into the break about Gableman, just a former Supreme Court Justice Gableman and his hoax investigation into alleged election improprieties in the last presidential race, which is a complete fraud on Wisconsin taxpayers having to pay for that report. But also just this past week, you know, examples of extremism running the gamut in Republican politics, whether you're talking about Indiana and West Virginia passing, you know, draconian ban on abortion. The New Hampshire GOP for Senate, GOP candidate or nominee for Senate is a election denier. Up in Green Bay, you had, you know, rallies this weekend by candidate Michaels for governor. And President Trump this weekend warned about big problems facing the country if he is indicted. And, you know, filling his rally with what appeared to be QAnon conspirators and hand signs and music cues. And so my point is this, and I want to ask you to comment on it. My point is the Republican Party has left, in my opinion, a lot of those Republicans that I used to know and practice law in front of out in Waukesha County. It's not your dad or the Jerry Ford Republican Party anymore. So when you're running a race like this in an area like you are, you know, how much are you running against that and trying to alert voters to the extremism on the other side and filling that in also with a pro-Jessica, pro-Democratic Party campaign? And how do you walk that line?
Well, I mean, I think you make a great point there. What's going on with both the Republican Party? It seems like there's a big split here in that party where you have these, if you want to call it the MAGA Republicans, the people who believe in the conspiracy theories, the QAnon, whatever. And then you still have some of the old school Republicans still left out there too, whether it's somebody like Liz Cheney or Adam Kinzinger, people who, I mean, I disagree with their values, but I have a lot of respect for them because they stood up to President Trump when they knew that what he was doing is wrong. And, you know, it's crazy to see what's going on because if any average citizen did what he did, whether it's taking the documents from the White House to Mar-a-Lago and being investigated by the FBI and get an FBI raid on him, or inciting a violent insurrection on January 6th, we would all be thrown in jail like that, you know, and nobody should ever be held above the law. And I think this is dangerous rhetoric that we are seeing from Trump saying that there's going to be huge issues if he's indicted. You know, and the evidence is showing that he broke the law in many instances and he should be held accountable. And
So are you running on that? Are you telling people, look, there's radical Republicanism here. This isn't your father's party anymore. We've got to preserve our democracy and preserve people's rights to choose their own reproductive rights, et cetera? Or are you running on, this is what I want to do?
I'm running on, this is what I want to do, because I think this, at the end of the day, this campaign is what the people want. The people are the ones who elect me into office, and I'm running on the issues that we care about as Democrats. The issues such as, hey, you know, I am scared that if a supermajority happens in the state Senate, that our democracy may definitely be very much at risk here in our own state. And I'm not really so much going on to, you know, that side of the MAGA Republicans, whatever you want to call it, but I'm running a campaign based off what people want me to do as the representative, because they should vote for me, because I'm going to fight for them.
Number one issue for the people in your district, what do you see it as?
I definitely pro-choice. Pro-choice is definitely the number one issue out there right now. I hear that so many times out there in the door, so many times at events. In terms of number two issues, there's a range of stuff from still making sure healthcare is affordable, funding of public schools and public teachers, supporting unions and workers' rights. My opponent's very anti-union, very anti-workers' rights, as well as inflation, as well as a big issue. And I think that's affected a lot of people in our district.
All right. Jessica has been joining us. Jessica Katzenmeyer, state Senate candidate, Democratic Party for the Wisconsin 5th Senate District, from her car. You are in between events, I understand, right now.
Yes, I am. I am safely pulled aside in between events here right now. So, it's just that busy life as a candidate, working 16, 17-hour days. And this is what I think people want to see in their candidates, that they're going to work hard for them. And I think that's why people like me and they'll vote for me, and they respect me in this position.
Getting it done the fashion way. You talked about knocking on doors, standing in solidarity with people and causes that are friendly to Democratic politics, and people seeing you out in their district as a fighter. I mean, those are themes that never fail a candidate from either party, right, or for any race. Jessica, I want to thank you for joining us on the Paul Revere Show. This is attorney Craig Mastantuono. Mark Thompson will be back next week. And you can find Jessica at jessicaforwi.com. Thanks very much.
Thank you so much for having me on.